Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And good morning. By golly, we're missing some of our crew. Where is everyone? What happened? What happened? Lynn, where are you? She's supposed to be the host today, and she's missing. So, Well, we'll just have to forge on without her. I don't know. And we don't see Bruce or Michael or... I don't know what's happening this morning.
Yeah, we heard the Bruce...
Gremlins.
Hey, Bruce, what?
I know
Gremlins
Bruce,
have taken...
I need... You don't have your headphones on.
All right, sorry, I'm interrupting.
That's all right. So, hey, here's what's... this is the New Year's edition of the Brown Briefly. And if you heard, of course, our founder, Brian, who was did our introduction, as always. And... we're trying to keep everything a little bit upbeat. There's Lynn. By golly, she finally made it. Hey, where you
Sorry,
been?
You don't want to hear about all of that.
Well, I was trying to do your introduction, Lynn, but I'll turn it over to you, and you can finish up.
Well, thank you. So you're already past the Brian part.
Yes, we are.
Well, thank you, and I apologize for being late. I got caught in traffic. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. The dog got in the way?
Or Brown Briefly. You heard from Brian then, who left us in January to work behind the scenes to change the downward and perilous course of history we've been on these last few years. Thanks, Brian. I hope you're up there celebrating with the notorious Ruth Bader Ginsburg, whose most excellent judgment may have helped. I am today's host, philosopher saint, and unwieldy Zoom member, Lynn Kerrigan. And I'm joined today by the usual band of merry men and women that Brian assembled to dissect the national news from a progressive viewpoint. So Bruce Holman is not going to be with us today, but he is being substituted for by our friend and producer, Susan McCabe. Welcome, Susan.
Good morning. I'm really happy to be here with you guys today, especially on this auspicious New Year's show.
Here you go.
Wonderful to have you again. Former teacher and futurist author Gail Kellner. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everyone. And almost happy New Year.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see this one in the rearview mirror, I have to say.
Yeah. Former engineer and citizen activist Kevin Jones. Morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Good morning. I had an opportunity to apply those engineering skills today. We had a little communications system down at the club that had to be fixed, and by gosh, you know, the skills still work. So sometimes you just have to dust them off and try them again. Good to be with y'all today.
It's like me with my former social work skills. When I try it, I find I don't have the patience that I did when I was working. I don't want to hear one more person's problem. I think that's what I've learned.
Yeah.
I don't see Michael on the screen. Is he with us?
You know, he was going to have to leave early today, so he may have just decided that he just could not do it. You know, so
well,
I don't
know. Yeah. If he joins us later, he will be actor, builder, and Buddhist backwoodsman Michael Shook. And in the Gene Boss studio in bustling downtown Vachon, I will thank our pilot of the airwaves, Truman O'Brien, for keeping us going. Thanks, Truman.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
I'm glad to see you all here through the miracle of Zoom. Long may it be free. So we're going to do a little something different today, a little traditional end of year, beginning of the new year show. And I'm going to start with a snippet from the Greetings Friends year-end poem that is always in the New Yorker. And this one is from the 1228 New Yorker edition from 1920 by writer Ian Frazier. Friends, one and all, let us unmute, excite the timbrel and the lute, make merry with our pots and pan, the hour's 11, and so we can, and shout from the balcony or lawn for joy at what will soon be gone, and praises sing for what is here, the end to this undreamt of year. Commune with us, dear friends, while we strew gifts abundant round the tree, and help us pick out something nice for Vashon's mask up populace.
I like your edit at the end. That was great. Hey, you know, I read something, Lynn, that I thought was pretty interesting. An Irish tradition is that at midnight on December 31st, you open your front door, and you leave it open for a bit to let the old year out and the new year in. I thought, you know, that's a great tradition, huh? I'm not sure I'm going to get up at midnight, though.
The new year rush in. Let's all do that. That's fun.
Or a raccoon or two.
Yeah, at my house, that would definitely be it.
So let's play the retro hindsight game of best and worst, laughter, tears, and fears about 2020. And for 21, a dice game, hazarding some lessons, hopes, and predictions for 2021. While we all await January 5th, the Senate runoffs in Georgia, the delayed stimulus package, and January 6th to see what Pence will do in the Senate's counting of Electoral College votes, and January 20th, when we should have a new president, inshallah, let's have some much-needed fun. So, Gail, would you start us off? What strikes you as some of the best and worst moments of 2020?
Well, there's, of course, quite a long list that one could go, but I'll start with one of the best. There was a moment when Harris Biden team was announcing and introducing the initial cabinet picks, where I had a welling of with the sense of pride, even patriotism, that we had elected, you know, a Biden-Harris ticket into the White House. And and right at the top of that list of cabinet appointees was the addition of John Kerry as a special presidential envoy for climate. And I that was very soothing to me and uplifting in the sense that it's wonderful to see the powers that be at the White House acknowledging the need of this very crucial issue that is sitting not only in our lap some of the time, but certainly on the horizon looming larger and larger. So I was very happy to see them take that so seriously and him being told that he would have a seat at any table, anytime, in any deliberations.
Yeah. I have to tell you, I had the opposite reaction to John Kerry. I really wanted Jay Inslee to get a nod about climate because he has done such a yeoman's job of local plans about that. And I think he started that conversation in that group of candidates. And I wanted somebody younger and fresher than John Kerry. But I agree, he is a fabulous, experienced diplomat who should be able to get us back in the Paris Climate Accords and all that.
Well, and to add, it was less for me about the particulars of John Kerry. I too would have liked to seen Jay Inslee, but it was more that the level of a cabinet position on climate is the piece that is, I think, outstanding.
Yeah, I have to agree with that, but I will disagree with the Jay Inslee thing because I really want him here in Washington. He's got a lot to do here, and he continues to help us lead the country in environmental issues. So I'm glad Jay is here. I'm betting that he was invited but said no. And I think John Kerry will do a great job. And yes, Lynn, cabinet position on the environment is big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Why don't you go ahead, Susan? Tell me what struck you about this year, best, worst moments.
Well, I think a lot of people learned to bake bread. And if you had stock in toilet paper, you're rich. I think it's great that we got outdoors and we really learned to appreciate the calming influence of nature, that for us here who are not in a metropolitan area was a big benefit. For those who are in tighter spaces, I don't think that worked so well. But beyond the pandemic, I'm glad that the climate crisis moved to the forefront. And I'm also glad that we embraced our racism so we can let go of it. I think we're all much more aware of the diversity in this country, and hopefully we can embrace our distinctions and not make them differences. And the worst moments, the orange one, he made them all. That list is too long.
I didn't mention my worst moment. Yes, I want to let Kevin jump in here, but since Susan brought it up, I have to say, when the Senate acquitted Trump in February, I found that was one of the lowest moments, and I am so pleased that the country, perhaps not by an overwhelming majority, but still a solid majority, is ushering him out of office.
Yes. Kevin, jump in.
I'll start with the bad and go to the good. For some reason, a quarter of a million Americans who lost their lives due to this COVID virus was just such a huge milestone. And of course, we're just in the next day or two going to cross the 350,000. But it's just the notion that we know that we need to be better than this. we know that we have been better than this in the past, and that the suffering is just not warranted. It's a clear failure, and something that we need to recognize as that and put it in our past, hopefully forever. But let's see, on the good news side,
yes.
Two things. First of all, 8:35 in the morning, local time, November 7th, when the election was formally called for Biden and Harris, I was out on my back, pans and waiting. That was pretty awesome. A long, long haul, to get to there. But the other thing, Susan mentioned nature and just the reflection that, again, this year, we live in a place where not everybody likes the deer on Vashon, but when the mother deer comes by with her fawn that's no more than a week or two old, and it's still stumbling around on spidery little legs, it's hard to not appreciate the place that we live and the renewal of spring. Mm-hmm.
That's very sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I hate to turn back on, such a sweet thought, and I couldn't agree with you more about the love of nature and how much it's rejuvenating and saving nature. And I only wish that for more people. But I think it is important at some level to recognize that the COVID-19 did not have to go the way it did. If you look at the large maps, worldwide maps, the United States is by far per capita been hit the hardest. And that has a lot to do with the unfortunate lack of leadership, and even leadership in the wrong direction, such as not masking, that has been, the outcome of that.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. It's shocking to see us in league with Brazil, Bolsonaro's similar lack of management. So we are in that league these days, and I look forward to that turnaround.
I think one thing that we need to think about as a takeaway for 2020 is, what is it about human society and global economy that has caused the rise of fascists, essentially, fascism, not just here, but the rise of the embrace of dictators, like in Brazil and other places, and here? What is it about the global economy and about our culture that has brought us to this point, and what can we take away to soften that, to level the economic playing field, to respond to those folks who voted for Trump against their own best interests.
What do you think about that, Susan?
Well, I think this kind of mirrors the Gilded Age before the crash.
Yes.
In 19, was it 29?
Yes.
And I think we might be looking at that, and what we need to think about is how to support a return to a vital middle class, how to support those people who have been pushed out of jobs by technology, not by the environment, by technology, and by the oligarchs who put money and shareholders' profits above everything else. We need to be legislating to even that out, or we're going to end up with another economic crash or a revolution, an armed revolution.
Yes, I agree, Susan, exactly with your points. Truman, jump in here. What do you think?
Well, good side, I think, is a bit more mundane. But the thing that that heartened me more than anything was just seeing how Vashon responded. Everybody masked up. Everybody supported the restaurants that had to close and that were just using, the takeout. And people were giving big tips for the workers who were serving us in those restaurants. Anyway, I just felt really great about that, about what a great job we all did and how we all kind of came together. A low point for me, though, was the whole anarchy thing in Seattle. That absolutely just, I could not believe that we allowed that to happen. The breaking of windows and burning of cars and all of that. I was really upset about that. And I really have a problem with it. And the fact that we let it go on as long as we did, it's ridiculous. There has to be a better way to do that. And I don't mean the military coming in or anything, but something's got to be done that's different. I don't know what.
Do you have any ideas about that? About, you know, why a peaceful protest was hijacked by
I think that part of it was some of the fascist groups that we were talking about. I mean, I know that there was a very peaceful protest in downtown Seattle, and all of a sudden a group came in that was not a part of that protest. They started breaking windows and burning cars and all of that kind of stuff. I don't think it was the peaceful protesters that were starting it. So there had to be, there was some other influence there.
Yeah, I agree. I had sympathy for people who thought about not only the protests, but about even the idealistic taking over. This is our city, taking a piece of the city symbolically. But I remember saying on this show, this can't end well. And I was fearful for the movement, for the neighborhood, and for our government. It seemed like an impossible position for everybody to be in a standoff right now. And yet, I am quite amazed at how that has, I guess, led to a reckoning. You know, we'll have a new mayor, we'll have a new police chief. It really was quite a change in a turning point, I guess, in those protests. And I don't want to lose the peaceful parts of what happened where blacks are standing up and saying no more. I agree with that. And yet, I think we've got to find a way to work together on all of these matters. That's what's, on my mind as we go on into the new year. And I just want to say, also backing up what you said, Truman, about how Vashon responded, I want to give a great shout out to Ina Opplinger and John Osborne and Jim Bristow for the Vashon Medical Reserve Corps, right, and for them ramping up this incredibly fast and incredibly effective testing site on Vashon. It shows to me, Susan, the power of the local environment in working hard together to kind of manage things in a smaller way. And I think sometimes we have this era of, I don't know what I'll say, big government, but with a shadow oligarchical banking, you know, set of people who run the country economically. And I think that has got to change so that more effectiveness is in government to regulate and respond to what the people need. That's what I'd kind of like to pull out of that. Anybody have any last comments about this section?
Kevin was trying to get in.
Sir?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's, I agree, Truman, the concerns, you know, the, of what happened all over the country, right, in terms of peaceful protests ending up in violent protests. And I think it's really challenging to I don't know how much we know about the forces that changed that. I know I saw one news report that someone associated with a white supremacist group had gone into an area where there was a peaceful protest and started to do property damage.
Yep.
And so, and I, Susan, to the points you were making, I don't know if we can underestimate in terms of, you know, this you know, lessening of democracy around the world. I don't know how effective the propaganda from the dictators of the world are. Certainly, we hear a lot about Russia and how their national interests are benefited as democracies are weakened. And I don't underestimate the ability of the propaganda machine that's been refined so many decades in the Soviet Union. And certainly ours, we have a propaganda machine too. But I think those are a number of effects. There's a lot of places for division to occur. And I think people are just getting very capable at exploiting those. And it's not in our best interest. And I don't have an idea about how to fix it other than to recognize it first. And maybe that's the first step.
Yeah. Thank you. Very thoughtful. Gail.
Well, I just wanted to add a couple of things. I think it's, you know, we think about the rise of fascism, and yet I think it's important to realize that actually was the norm up until, you know, 250 years ago around the world. So now there have been pockets of democracy forever in native cultures, in places in Iceland, there's been in the far north, there have been In other places around the world that I'm sure we don't even know much about that have gone the way that history does. But I do think that it is something to be paying very close attention to, and was one of the reasons that I was very, some people started calling John Kerry the climate czar. And I was like, no, I don't like that term. You know, I think that special presidential envoy for climate is a little clumsy and long. However, but it speaks, you know, I think it speaks to the nature of an appointed position by the people as opposed to a czar, which is all powerful and not not in the least bit democratic.
How about guru? Climate guru.
How about ambassador?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, where we have to work together in this world about that huge, huge threat.
I'll tell you, you said something that really is it. All those folks that voted for Trump, we got to work together with those folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all there is to it. And I know that I've talked to a number of them that they don't want to work together. I mean, they really... they're hot to keep going, you know, with this craziness. But no matter what, we have to do that. I mean, we have to work with them. Susan?
Yeah, I guess we have to hope that new leadership is going to encourage all of us, starting with the legislators, to think of one another not as enemies, right, but as colleagues in making democracy happen. I mean, I think if you were to walk up to any of those friends of yours who don't want to work together and say, okay, you don't want democracy anymore, right? They wouldn't say that.
No. They'd say, no, I don't want a socialist government. That's what I don't want. I don't want that socialism. I mean, you know, that's,
right.
I get it. I mean, there are many failed socialist states around the world, but not going there.
That's how propaganda works. It creates scary, fiery, incendiary language.
I have to tell you, I wrote to one of my buddies, said, you know, I'm not going to live in a socialist country. And I said, well, you know, I don't blame you. And you know what? I think you need to quit going to the VA, that darn socialized medicine, you know, that the VA's got. And you should start paying for those grandkids' schooling. We don't want that socialist education program.
And you know, none of that Social Security stuff.
Get rid of that. So you don't, you're not collecting Social Security, are you, at 72?
Yeah.
Come on, you know, you got to get rid of that, man. Yeah. That's socialism.
Get a job.
It didn't fly. So.
To me, it's so important that we understand the spectrum of governments, you know, and that socialism is sort of, as you said, a flash word that sounds like government is everywhere. And really the main definition of it is let the laborers reap some of their rewards for working. That's really kind of what it's about. And, you know, we're kind of in the middle. We are not socialist. We're social democracy, where we distribute a little bit of money through Medicare and Social Security, and thus have a better middle class than
What I said was, look, until they start nationalizing the airlines and nationalizing the steel industry and nationalizing, you know, then you need to start worrying. But if you're just talking about the social programs that are do-good programs, that's a totally different ballgame than socialism, as it were.
That's right.
And Eisenhower Republicans were all for all of that.
Absolutely.
That's right. Gail, did you have your hand up just a second ago?
I did, but let's let Kevin go first.
Yeah, go, Kevin. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I wonder, Truman, the concern over, you know, socialism, and as you just pointed out, you know, we're many, many steps away from that. The other pendulum motion is towards privatization, right?
Yes.
Where, you know, on Vashon, we have a proud history of taking away the privatization of the ferry system, because we were held hostage to a business who saw profits ahead of serving the population. And similarly, toll roads, you can imagine, right? That's a revenue generator for another person who's maybe on their way to being an oligarch. So I'm curious how your buddies see that side of the pendulum. Is that equally negative, or is that the way it should go?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And I don't know the answer to that, but I do know. I mean, there obviously are some things that are run better by the private sector than by the government. I mean, it's very obvious. But there are some things it's pretty darned obvious there too, that you have to have some government intervention. I mean, it just has to be. I'm a big deregulation guy. I mean, I saw what deregulation did for the airlines. It boosted it made lower airfares and better service all around. But that was in deregulation. But there are some things that obviously need to have some regulation. I mean, it's pretty obvious, you know.
I always teach my grandson that a rider on a horse has to have both spurs and reins.
There you go.
Oh, I like that.
And that's really the function of regulation, is to kind of see to it that the people benefit more than the owners of those businesses. Yeah. You know, that it's distributed a little different. Gail.
Well, I'm in dangerous ground right now, possibly disagreeing with Truman.
Oh no, come on, Gail.
I would love to see us move to a social democracy, the likes that we see in Northern Europe. I think that, you know, capitalism is fine. I think capitalism definitely has a place in the world and in society. Particularly, its quick responsiveness to needs. I think the creativity that is let out in those kind of situations. I think that's a fantastic part of capitalism. But when we're talking corporations that have so much power that they're controlling the government, then that's where I begin to definitely feel that that's out of place. I think that when you put profits over, and to put it simply, profits over people in things like health insurance, I think that's a problem. When you have a basic need, it has to be backed up by a governmental program that allows for security for people. Healthcare would be a prime example of that. in my opinion. Go ahead, Truman.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Gail. I'm not going to argue about that. I'll tell you what, though. I know that one of the big arguments for the Affordable Care Act was the mandate that you had to have insurance. You had to buy insurance. You were forced to buy insurance of either the government or private or whatever. And I like all my my good Republican friends did not like that idea. But you know what? I've been thinking about it. And the whole thing about Social Security, when that first came out, you were forced to put your money into Social Security. I mean, you had to do it. And we are right now. I mean, you have a job and part of your money goes to Social Security, whether you want to or not. And guess what? It's a pretty darn good program. The people who are now collecting it, me being one of them, appreciates the fact that I had to do that because it's available now. And so that's kind of began to worm its little way into my feeble brain and saying, you know, by golly, maybe they got something here on this healthcare thing, that maybe we do have to invest. Maybe we do have to force people to invest in that in order to get the benefits of it. So,
yeah. Well, just to respond directly to what Truman's saying, I think that that's the importance of, and I think there's a reason that everyone should be required to be a part of that system, is because we should not be leaving anybody on the street bleeding or as the case is, it's young people who did not want to pay into that, or presumably healthy people that were like, I don't need it, but there will come a day when they will need it. And they have to, like you say, Truman, they have to have started in the system and be exactly. part of it.
Yeah.
So, Susan, I see your hand there.
Yeah, I need to throw a bit of a wrench into that because that mandate was unfortunately not that altruistic. That mandate was a nod to the insurance companies to help their actuarial tables.
Right.
If they had enough healthy young people signed up, then they could provide the insurance at a relatively affordable rate to the rest of us. As soon as people did not sign up, that's when the cost of the Affordable Care Act went up to a lot of people. So, frankly, in my view, if we get the insurance companies out of healthcare and make a single payer in the government, then it'll work.
Yeah.
Yes. I agree with that, too. Kevin?
Yeah, I'd like to just jump in. Looking at, Truman, you were talking about privatization and the efficiencies of private industry in the profit motive, you know, versus government. Of course, we always have to factor in that cost, right? That profit that we would have to pay. So in other words, I'm willing to live with some inefficiencies because it might be overall cheaper. But every area, right, is different. But I was the point that I guess, you know, we've heard from, maybe it was Ross Perot who started this statement, we need to run the government like a business. Well, you know, I worked in business. I was a second level manager and I worked for executives. And business is all about how can we win and defeat the other guy so that we can take more profits and earn more money. And, you know, it's a mindset which is really competition, how to win and beat the other person. And it's sort of a single sum game, right? There's a certain number of contracts that you can win. And you've got to go after those and get more of those than the other guy to be successful. But government, I don't think wins with that mindset. I think government loses with that mindset. And I think that it's about how we work together to create, a country that we all want to live in. So it's an interesting trade-off, right? And lots of different perspectives, but that's what came to mind for me.
You know, Kevin, I thank you for pointing that out. And in the ethics world that I was in for a while in the medical field, the term for that has been used to teach is that the business world uses contracts, which are very specific goals and very specific targets for their bottom line, whatever it is, usually profits. Whereas in government, you have a covenant, which is the idea of a sacred trust between people to look after the people's best interests first. And that's what is hard to get with a business only frame of mind. And I want to turn the corner for us into 2021, if I can. And I want to say that I was really struck by an article in the Seattle Times under Naomi Ishizaka's column, the 1220 12, 2820 edition of the Seattle Times, there was a quote by Reverend Dr. Kelly Brown, who's from the Plymouth Congregation in Seattle, who quoted Nora Zeal Hurston, the anthropologist and author, saying, "There are years that ask questions and years that have answers." And she goes on to say that years have character and purpose, and years can teach. So let me ask you all, what have we learned from 2020 that we're going to apply to 2021? What are your hopes for 2021? What do you predict may or will happen? Who will start? Kevin.
I'd be happy to start, Lynn. Myself and many people on Vashon have been supporting a community, a group called Black Pack. And Black Pack works across multiple states representing the Black community and encouraging them to take a voice in our democracy, make sure they get out and vote and participate. And they don't call them apathetic voters, they call them voters who need more information about the importance of participating. And the thing that strikes me is they, in our conversations, we talk about the replies you get when you're texting voters, and you really hear some really terrible, obnoxious feedback from some voters. And you're really tempted to, you know, fight back. And they say, you know, don't do that. The abuse that you sustain at the end of a text is nothing like the abuse we have sustained over the years of our presence in this country. We need to be strong together, and we need to hold up the light that we seek a better future. I have found no defenders of democracy than these groups who have lost so much to democracy because they haven't really been benefited by the words that are in our own Constitution. And I'm just really inspired by the durability, the patience, the persistence, and the really long-running trend that they're in it for generations. They really want to see this country move to a place that aspires to the words that are on the paper. And I'm really impressed by that.
That's beautiful, Kev.
Yes, yes.
Susan, what are your thoughts about 2021?
Well, I'm hoping that... Well, one of the things that you guys mentioned, Kevin, you were talking about competition in capitalism, and it's based on a flawed view of human nature, I believe. I believe that, and studies show, that human nature is really about cooperation. That is where we naturally go. And I'm hoping that we take that with us this year, especially from groups like Black Pack, especially as a response to what's gone on in 2020, which has been capitalism gone to the horrific extreme that ignores the whole and speaks only to a few individuals, serves only a few individuals. So I hope that in 2021 we take cooperation into the mainstream and embrace it and applaud it and use it for the benefit of all.
There you go. Well said. Thank you. Truman, what do you think?
Well, I don't know. What I've said before, that we have to work with folks, quote, across the aisle. I mean, that's the only solution, period. And approaches what you were saying, Susan, about cooperation. I mean, we just have to do that. There's no other way. You know, we need everybody to participate. Yeah.
I will say that I heard a wonderful poem by Stephen Silla, who was working with a group on the idea that African-American males are jailed, you know, at such high proportions, often as adolescents, often for long lifetime sentences. And he's involved with a group that's now in Michigan that intends to go national, called the Adolescent Redemption Project, working to kind of get the stories of men out in the general public and the idea of rejoining society and how can we facilitate that so we're not acting out of fear to incarcerate people. And I'm just going to, this is my part of this section. I'm going to read his poem that he wrote for the solstice. This is Stephen Silla, who says, I pray that my prayers be the right ones for me, for you, for the world. I embrace the mystery of these times. I embrace the need for change, new ways of praying, new ways of seeing, new ways of knowing what we've known all along. I kneel to the ground. I kneel to the stars. I kneel to the mystery. I cry for the incarcerated who can't be with the ones they love. I cry for the dead. I cry for our culture. May we bind our wounds and learn to see the gold in each other. I cry for the war machine. Let it help make peace. I love how my tears can bring joy. I love the earth singing. I love the myriad ways we can love. And that's what I'd like to see, is a turn from the hatred into a more common way of feeling for each other. Gail.
Well, I was looking forward to 2021. One thing I was heartened by was the movement across the aisles to go ahead, like even this recent stimulus package. And tucked into that stimulus package, besides, you know, direct payouts and support for a small business and things like that, there was $35 million, or excuse me, that number is actually, I believe, billion, $35 billion set aside for climate action, which is encouraging to me, as well as there was money set aside for Pell Grants for prisoners, so that when someone is incarcerated, they have an opportunity to school themselves and to come out of there with some hope of rejoining society in a positive way.
Ooh, I like hearing that. I really like hearing that.
Lovely.
There was also a little money for a women's history museum tucked in there.
Yay. I'm going to stop us for a minute because we have 1 minute left and two things. Here's the end of the New Yorker end of year poem. And then Truman has a little bit of musical tag for the end. May justice come to all who thirst and hunger for it through the worst. Dear friends, if we could rhyme away the year's vast losses, we might say, let gladness rise, despite, love one another, routs the night. And kindness is a folding chair we carry with us everywhere. In depths of winter, prospects brighten, mighty streams of light will lighten the miles ahead, and goodness reign. Once more, the angels' glad refrain. Okay, Truman, if you've got any music up for me, let it.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.